Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer. I'm thrilled to be here at SoFi Stadium, the greatest stadium ever built. Chris Heatherington, by the way, that's why they kicked me off the board of the Rose Bowl. I started saying that and I didn't realize the Rose Bowl is actually a competitor to SoFi. And they're like, Dave, you can't be on the board of the Rose Bowl and tell everyone that SoFi is the greatest stadium ever built. So sorry, Rose Bowl, and sorry, Dave Meltzer. No offense to the MVP and board member Warren Moon, who still thinks the Rose Bowl is the greatest place on earth, which is fair enough. I'm blessed to be here with the playbook because nobody has a better playbook, in my opinion, than guys who have played on the field and have carried those lessons from the field into entrepreneurship. And it's interesting, as an Ivy Leaguer, you are an academic like myself. The only difference was you were an academic and a great football player. I was a below average college football player, but I personally believe what I learned from playing football all those years has helped me more than anything, my law degree, business degree, all the great academic experiences I've had, they pale in comparison to what I learned on the football field. I was wondering, someone from the Ivy League who's also an academic, how you comparatively analyze what you learned on the field compared to the academic side in that experience, how it's applied to what you're doing today.
Yeah, I mean, look, I went to Yale to be a student athlete first, and was blessed enough to have the opportunity to play professional football. And look, to your point, the things I learned from football and team sports in general, the ultimate team sport, right?
Yeah.
Football is the ultimate team sport. So everybody's got to understand their role and responsibility. Everybody's got to buy into this mission of competing and winning. And that's really helped me in my business career. You know, it's developing great teams, developing great cultures. I reflect back in some of the organizations I played for and understanding why we were successful and why we weren't successful. And a lot of it starts at the top and how they set that culture and build a winning organization and bring in players that buy into that vision, so to speak. So yeah, I think teamwork is important to me as I think about Fat Ed and the huge opportunity we have. A lot of it centers around the team and obviously execution and just going big, right? And empowering my team to be great and to think great things and come up with creative ideas. But every creative idea has to have an ROI associated, right? So establishing this culture, but undoubtedly, Dave, I agree. The things I learned from my competitive sports days have definitely carried into my professional life.
And in that professional life, you took on Fathead as CEO and obviously a new co-founder of it, and it made a big investment to buy the company. But it is also buying a brand because technology creates a whole new environment, a whole new opportunity. And a lot of people don't have that vision. They don't see the opportunity that exists from established communities that are going to be more expensive and more expensive to build, and brand recognition, which obviously is more and more competitive to build. You took a predominant brand, Fathead, in the sports world, and also graduation world, to kind of float it over, whatever. And you saw an opportunity to take the brand and the community, but apply today's capabilities to that brand and that community. What were some of the things you analyzed when you saw this predominant brand, but saw that they weren't really utilizing it in today's methodology?
Yeah, I mean, the hardest thing to do in business is to build a brand, right? I felt as though we were kind of starting on third base. We had incredible brand awareness and brand equity. We had 2 million email subscribers, over 300,000 SMS subscribers. We had 194 licenses with some of the most epic IP in sports and entertainment. You know, it had been out of culture and out of the conversation for the last 5 years. So we saw it as an incredible opportunity to, you know, bring this brand back to life and start. The best brands innovate, right? The best brands innovate. They become culturally relevant. We're operating at the speed of culture, we say, around Fathead. So we had an incredible opportunity to take a legacy brand and make investments in technology and automation and AI to really take this brand to the next level, right? The brand was everywhere back in the day, right? TV commercials, Super Bowl ads, all over ESPN, big athlete ambassadors. And in today's world, it's about social selling, live selling, affiliate partnerships, influencer partnerships, right? Investing in top of the funnel brand building is what our focus is today. And eventually we have these dreams of building this fan engagement platform, as we discussed, right?
Yeah.
And you know, these decals have become portals to trigger content. Right. But at the end of the day, we have so much core low-hanging fruit to our business, right? Growing these culturally relevant licenses we have. It's expanding distribution, right? Building out this custom side of the business, which is youth sports, NIL, college. We have all the college licenses. So really the business is broken up into two verticals, as you know, right? It's the licensed products, and then it's the custom business. So when I bought the business...
Custom is print on demand or digital on demand. It's on demand. Yeah.
Yeah, our biggest relationships with FedEx, they do the majority of our printing and shipping. They have these 18 hubs throughout the country. So it's very efficient in that typically whoever the end user is determines where these products are printed and shipped. So it's great. But you know, we'll start to expand distribution. We got approved on Walmart, Target, Lowe's, Amazon.com. You know, we're going to be in some of the team stores. And it's exciting. It's taking an iconic brand and making an investment in technology and automation and AI. We're doing big things at AI to learn how to target better and acquire customers better. And to your point, it's getting more and more expensive to acquire customers on Meta and Google. And so we got to live in these platforms where consumers are at. We got to talk to them in the right way. We got to create these specific personas. And it's been exciting. You know, we have big plans for Fathead, but it's just, you know, at the end of the day, David, it comes down to the X and O's of the business, right? We've spent a lot of time over the last year and a half really cleaning up the business, optimizing the business, and laying the foundation for growth. And we have a lot of opportunities, but we're running it like a real business, you know, and you gotta grow profitably, you gotta grow intentionally. And so you got a really great team and really big plans.
You know, I've always been curious when I meet a great leader, a business leader like yourself, in their own methodology of prioritization. I tell people all the time, prioritization is the antidote to the two things that stop most entrepreneurs, successful ones, feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And that could be overwhelmed with success as well as the other side of it, or procrastination, which is the pause that's created by the anxiety that I have too much opportunity and options and touches of favor in my life. So someone like you, I was always curious, how are you prioritizing when there is so much? Even if you were a $1 billion company, yeah, and had that type of capability, you still have so much opportunity. You would have to have some sort of process of prioritization.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think our mantra is either hell yes or not yet. There's so many opportunities.
I love that.
So many partnership opportunities.
Is that a cult saying, by the way?
But it's all about focus and it's all about execution. And like I said, I say this a lot, we have a lot of opportunities, but look, our KPIs are very clear, right? We wake up every day and we sell more product, right? And to do that, you got to expand distribution. You got to reach more consumers. Our total addressable market's almost overwhelming, right? We talked about this before. We've been a very North American business. So there's real opportunities to make this brand global. We'll see what's going on in Premier League Soccer. Huge fandom. You know, Asia's a market we want to get into in a big way. Cricket, one of the biggest spectator sports in the world, and starting to expand globally. And then finally, it's, you know, youth sports, as you know, is... Yeah. You know, forecast to be a $65 billion business by 2030, right? We're all about youth sports and getting this brand back and capture that younger demographic. And I think we can make an incredible impact in youth sports. And you know, at the end of the day, we're a brand, right? So we got to invest in brand building again. We're a product. We have amazing products. We have 37,000 SKUs, and we have a pretty clear product innovation roadmap. And then we could be a service, right? With our technology, we could service teams, leagues, fans, et cetera. So, but yeah, it all boils down to focus. It's hell yes or not yet. And, you know, I try to, as a leader, empower my team to come up with great ideas. But like I said earlier, every idea has to not have an ROI associated with it. And we have opportunities to expand categories. Music and gaming, as you know, are massive. And we have pretty good opportunities there. But it's like, all right, we have these incredible licensed partners. Let's focus on those. Let's build those relationships. Let's collaborate. Let's participate in tentpole events together and really grow those partnerships. And at the end of the day, the more product we sell, the more royalties we pay to these partners. So that's our goal. And then it's building out the custom side of the business. It's exciting. When we bought the business, that was about 25% of the revenue. It's about 35 now. And I envision a world very soon where it's about 50-50.
That's amazing. One of the sayings that I learned as a sports agent when I ran the most notable sports agency in the world was as a player when they were in contract negotiations, I'd have to tell them, leave it in the locker room. A lot of people can't leave it. When I personally was running the agency, I personally went bankrupt. I was involved in lawsuits. I had obviously a lot of internal stress in my marriage, a lot of things that came along with it. And that lesson of leaving it in the locker room really helped me because I was able to continue to build more money and more time that gave me a greater capability of succeeding. I'm sure you've had some personal struggles. You can be as vulnerable and as illuminating as you want, but I know what it takes to build a brand like Fathead with all those opportunities. When you have personal struggles or challenges, how do you leave it in the locker room? Because I've seen great leaders of great companies ruin great companies because they can't do that.
Yeah, I wake up every day and try to get better as a person. And, you know, I meditate religiously. I'm the crazy guy who wakes up at 4:30 and cold plunge and sauna.
I know who to call now.
Yeah. I still train like a professional athlete because I think being an entrepreneur is like being an athlete, right? You got to be mentally and physically sharp. I think having the ability to really flick that switch on and off, both when I was an athlete and as a, you know, an entrepreneur or running a business, it's really important. And it's really important to really take care of your mental wellness. And, you know, when I was an athlete, I tried to muscle through everything, right? And then as soon as I learned about meditation and yoga, it changed my life, right? And it's helped me be a better dad. It's helped me be a better husband. And more importantly, it's helped me be a better leader. So I think just having the ability to flick that switch on and off, like when I played football, I prided myself on being a tough guy, you know,
but almost everyone did.
Yeah. You know, I was the kamikaze running down a kickoff, trying to blow up the wedge and getting concussed all the time. But being a leader, you really got to have your wits about you and you really got to have a calm state of mind. And, you know, look, it hasn't been easy, right? Being an entrepreneur is hard work. And, you got to put in a lot of hours, but I feel like with a brand like Fathead, we're in a really good position. Surrounding myself with really smart people, we have great partners involved, and you know, we have big plans. So, but it's key to, you know, be a leader, but have the wits about you to really understand what it takes to empower people, what it takes to instill confidence in your team and your partners, and. I did a podcast with Mark Gottfried a couple weeks ago. We were talking about this. And I think from a psychological perspective, it's important for a head coach or a CEO or an executive like you to really understand what it takes to get the best out of people. And I try to focus on that every day.
In the context of meditation and yoga, coming from a ball busting, hard core lifestyle of, you know, getting through it, over it, around it, lying to it, cheating it, manipulating, whatever we do to resist what it is, there's this concept of surrender. And it's so confusing for most entrepreneurs, this idea of surrendering, but it's particularly difficult for people that come from the background that you come from, that, you know, I'm going to outwork you, the Gary Vee, you know, grind until you're dead. You know, I used to literally tell people there's enough time to sleep when I'm dead. And now sleeping is the number one non-negotiable in my life. And I literally would tell people, I don't need to sleep enough time when I'm dead. And now I'm the exact opposite. How do you describe surrender in this kind of predisposition of more a Tao, the, you know, calmness, a ferocious Buddha type of attitude? Because so many entrepreneurs, they just think it means if I surrender, that I'm just allowing everything to happen.
I think for me, I had a real massive fear of failure when I was younger. Like I was a very competitive individual, and I think
where'd that come from?
I was born with it.
Born with it? Okay, good.
You know, yeah. I was always just so competitive. Whatever I did, whether it's playing cards or, you know, on a golf course or, you know, running down a kickoff.
I'm sure your wife liked that.
Yeah.
Throwing the Scrabble board at her.
I think for me, a big kind of turning point in my career was being okay asking for help, getting mentors in my life. Excuse me, it was huge for me. And I eventually overcame that fear of failure. And, you know, entrepreneurship is hard.
Yeah.
Companies, business is very difficult. We know the stats of, you know, companies that succeed, companies that fail. But I think for me, asking for help, right? Surrounding myself with people like you that I can come to that offer unbiased, you know, expertise and experience that I can rely on. And, that's really helped me in my career. I think surrender is, you know, could be viewed as a negative connotation, but it's being at peace with asking for help, being at peace with you know, surrounding yourself with people smarter than you, and being at peace with surrounding yourself with mentors in your life. I mean, I'm a part of some pretty cool communities globally that there's all these badass executives around the world. I can pick up the phone and call them anytime.
So good.
And that's been huge for me. It was very hard for me to ask for help when I was younger, but that's been a game changer in my career.
There's three things that I think kids should focus in on, but also executives today. And I was wondering your take on all three. The first one is one which is a critical component of your business. I think every human being, especially children, should be practicing AI.
Yeah.
Not like literally practicing AI. What do you think about practicing AI? Is it applicable not just to your business, but to the future of all entrepreneurs?
Yeah, AI is where it's at, right? And we made a decision early on to start to invest in AI and automation, or else we'll get left behind. So that's really helped with our marketing strategies, targeting better, creating these personas, you know, how it affects our marketing campaigns. But yeah, I mean, I hear Gary Vee say this all the time, right? Gary's an advisor of mine.
Yeah.
You got to start paying attention to AI.
I think it'd be AI kids,
yeah.
Right? Grandkids.
Yeah.
I think we're not quite the kids, but grandkids. Yeah. I love that content.
Yeah, I think it's. I can't imagine being in high school and college now and having this access.
To
AI and ChatGPT and all that stuff. But you know, I think there's boundaries to that, or needs to be boundaries to that as well. Like I get resumes where you can tell where they picked up a ChatGPT, and I'm like, that's not cool with me, right? There's got to be a human touch in this. And but I think the best companies are investing in AI. You know, it's really been a part of our culture. When we hire marketing agencies or internal resources, we want to make sure they are top of AI. But yeah, it's everywhere, man.
Second.
It's a little scary too, though.
Yeah.
I think, you know, from a job standpoint and all that, you know, it could get scary, but I think the best companies are utilizing it very, very successfully.
Yeah, I agree with you. If it makes humans more human, that's what I'm looking for. And that's how I'm trying to utilize it. The second thing that I encourage people to do may fall within the context of our academic backgrounds, but it's reading. I believe that to make a difference in the future, we need to be able to determine and utilize the muscle of imagination that only reading can provide, but also the distinction between real and imaginative. So your ability to read, as you have done as an academic, yeah, is how you can look at a resume and say, this isn't a human trying to be more human.
Right.
This is the shortcutter,
right,
or whatever characteristic would apply to it. How important do you think this aspect of, we should really be pushing our employees as well as our children to read more?
I'm a huge fan of reading. I've always been a reader. I've always had a growth mindset. There's so much access to great information out there online, through books, entrepreneur, or whether you're, you know, trying to focus on your health and wellness, whatever it is. There's incredible information out there. And so, you know, I look at some of these in the world, and the common denominator is they all read.
Yeah,
and they've all
read some of the same books. That's why we became chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute. Is I look for Think and Grow Rich, Outwitting the Devils, you know, the success principles, like the standard, the ones that are dying.
Yep.
That if you look at great leaders like yourself and you say, hey, have you read Think and Grow Rich?
Yep.
Oh, changed my life.
Yep. I saw they came out with a movie. I was trying to get that yesterday.
I'm in that movie. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think reading is a powerful tool. I try to, you know, I have two kids, 11 and 6, and I'm very strict about them reading because I know how good it is for them.
Now, lastly, I'm going really old school as far as entrepreneurship and salesmanship, but I believe the third most critical capability that we need to help our children and our employees with is straight out cold calling, whether it's in person, knocking on doors, email, texting, social. We need to get people to call us back. And the only way to do that I know is to be able to have the personal skills of cold calling. And whatever courage is lacking today, it seems to me it may become a lost art. And just like being an electrician or a plumber, I think you're golden for the future if you have those skill sets.
Yep.
I think if you're a cold caller, that the difference between the AI cold calling and this human being more human cold calling is going to be such a valuable skill set. How do you feel about the capability of cold calling?
I love it. I did it in college. I interned at Merrill Lynch and was cold calling out of the yellow pages and the white pages.
But these kids don't even know what those are.
No.
It's like the Thomas Brother Guide.
Yeah.
The original Magellan.
I think rejection and failure is important. I think that's important to learn at a very young age. And I've become more empathetic to cold callers. Now that I did it, back in the day.
Real ones, not AI ones.
Real ones.
Yeah, right.
I know how hard it is. It's all about rejection and failure. But when you have success doing it, there's no better feeling, right? The hit ratio is pretty low. But I think in everything in life, it comes down to sales. And so I think the more you can learn at a younger age, that you're setting yourself up for success.
My favorite quote, I'm a quote person. I believe in mantras and quotes, and I'm reinforcing all the time where I want to be or better by the ideas and people I surround myself with. One that knocked me to my feet is one that's applicable even today, even though it within itself tells its own lesson. And the quote is, you're either humble or you're about to be. And life happens that way, very slowly, then all of a sudden, that all of a sudden causes great humility. Aligned with the surrender that we mentioned earlier. I was wondering what that quote meant to you today with everything going on in your life and your path and your journey. You're either humble or you're about to be.
Yeah, I think for me, I've always tried to focus on being a humble individual. I've had some adversity in the last year, as you know, our house burned down in Palisades, and I think that was the ultimate test of humility. Mm-hmm. But I think you turn that experience into gratefulness. That's what I try to do. I said, look, we're healthy, we're safe. We have each other, my family, two young boys and my incredible wife. And all our possessions burned down and our community burned down and our schools burned down and our church burned down. But let's try to find some gratefulness in that we're healthy and we're safe. We can rebuild, we can, acquire these material possessions again or not,
right?
But I think being, humility is a very powerful thing in this world. It's hard in today's culture with social media and the crazy things that are going around the world and seeing what's happening in LA right now, which is, devastating. But humility is key. Try to find these key moments or these life moments that happen and you got to use it as an incredible opportunity to express humility, but also, like I say, right? I call it Jocko Willett, right? He's like,
yeah,
we lost a deal, good, my house burned down, good. I'm going to move to Orange County and start a new life and, join a new community and my kids are going to become more resilient and stronger as a result of it. But it's a powerful term.
Well, I'm blessed to have you as a friend, but also as an icon of wisdom and faith. Shortening that distance of resistance that so many entrepreneurs experience. I think genius to me is defined as an expression of God. And I think your business acumen, your friendship, your leadership is genius. It's an expression of God, a truth. And I believe in my wholest of entrepreneur expertise that Fathead will have to be reckoned with as it grows and accelerates and the outcomes will be exponential. And I just want to pre-congratulate you in something that's already done in my mind with your success at Fathead. Chris Hetherington, thanks for joining me.
Feeling is very mutual.
It's an honor. That's here for my friend Chris Hetherington with Fathead. This is David Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.